So that relaxes me as well. So again, I'm really honored to be here today talking to you all. And I hope that this time will bring you some joy. So I'm just going to start with a little exercise I wasn't planning to do. But you know, we all get all caught up in a lot of different stuff, right? And in most spiritual traditions, and Jesus, as the wisdom teacher that he is, was always telling us that we should be like little children, and it's only then that we'll enter the kingdom of heaven. And so, why do you think that is? What is it about children? They're in constant wonder. And in fact, that same passage a little bit later, I looked it up, and it says that children, or it actually says the angels of children are constantly seeing the face of God. I hadn't heard that before. But isn't that a beautiful thought? So they're living constantly in wonder, constantly, wow, look at that, you know, the smallest little thing. They'll notice it when we're all caught up with, you know, who knows what. So I'd like you all to just look at your hand for a moment. Really look at your hand and think about your hand and what a wondrous, amazing thing that is. Move your fingers. Look at your fingernails, which I should have cut and I did not this morning. Now that I look. Bend them. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that marvelous? So throughout our lives, throughout the days, the hours, the minutes, we can always find something like, just stop when you're stressing, worried, angry, bitter, whatever's going on. Someone just told you you had cancer, I don't know, you know, whatever. Look at your hand, or stop and look anywhere around you at anything. Anything, look at that unity. Well, you guys should look up here. Is there something on the wall? Look at the ceiling, look at the tree. Yeah, there's all these things everywhere. You can look outside and see the green that there is out there. So that thing, that's what being like little children is all about. And that's where we're going to find healing. So for me, when I speak about healing, I'm talking about physical healing, but I'm talking about all healing. It's all one big amalgam. It's spiritual healing and mental healing and emotional healing and physical healing. All of it is going on all the time. So there may be some rare, is there anybody out there who's completely healed? Raise your hands. Raise your finger, yeah. So there may be a rare individual who's completely healed, and we might find that in some moment, those moments of just pure love and joy and bliss. So it might happen to us for a moment, but generally speaking, it won't last forever. Because we're human. We may be spiritual beings, but we are very, very human. And as the Buddhists say, life is suffering, which doesn't sound very jolly. It's not a very unity kind of thought. But when we know that's not our true reality, but it is a real acknowledgement that we are all in need of healing all the time, because that's the truth of the matter. Something is going to spark some anger in us, or we're going to misstep and say something we wish we wouldn't have said, and you know, feel regret and remorse, and we may lose something that we really love, or a person we really love, or we may have some physical illness that's changing our lives dramatically, or even not so dramatically. We might lose a job. You know, all kinds of things happen to us every day. And even when we work really hard at healing something and think, I've got that now, that is done, I'm done with that, what happens? Something else comes around, we're stressed, or something reminds us, something accesses that pain that's within us. And there it is again, we get to heal again, even if it's on something that we've spent a lot of time working on. So for me, this is our spiritual journey. From the time we're very young, the healing begins, and it's ongoing until the time we leave these bodies. That's part of the human experience. So I was actually doing some reading this week. I'm very, most of you know, or some of you know, that I'm very into yoga philosophy. It's really helped me understand my own spiritual path in very, very deep ways. And this week I was reading about santosha, the yogic concept of santosha, which is contentment. And it was talking about how this idea of contentment is actually a recognition of our true beings. So we're not going to really feel this pure contentment unless we access this deeper place within us. So that place for me rests within the heart. And that's where the truest and deepest healing happens, regardless of what else is going on in our lives, whether it's a physical challenge or a mental one, whatever. When we heal what's deep within our hearts, then there is true healing, and we can find this contentment that's really a shift in perspective. So I was reading about that yesterday, and how if we can have this shift in perspective, how we can see like children, then it will be different. And today, the study of Santosha continued, and this person, this yoga teacher, actually used to be in the military, and he said he learned a lot about navigating, and that the most important part of navigation, it didn't matter what the compass reading was or anything, the most important part was to be sure that you knew where you were when you began. Because if you were off in that assessment, it didn't matter what the compass said, you would not find your way. So he was talking about this because that also happens to us. We assess ourselves in terms of lack or loss or, you know, somebody else did something to me or something that's not really our true nature, that's not really that radiance and beauty that we are within us. So if we can, when we feel lost or confused or angry or bitter, if we can reassess what we are viewing as our starting point is, it's going to be a very different story. Then we can find our way. So that really spoke to me this week when I was doing my study. And some of you probably know this, but the word yoga actually comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, Y-U-J, which means yoke. So we don't like that idea of being tied to something, do we? We want to be totally free. But it actually is talking about the whole experience, the whole spiritual journey is about trying to find our way back to God. Not that we're ever really truly separated, but we have the illusion that we are separated. So that's what this yoking is about. It means simply being in the flow and being united with God and with our own divinity, which is really everywhere. It's everywhere. It's in me. It's outside of me. It's in you. It's outside of you. It's everywhere at once. So yoga philosophy is summed up in these yoga sutras, and the first four really explain it beautifully. The first one simply says, in this sacred moment, we're going to begin, which happens every minute of every day. The second one, which is the most well-known, says, yogash chitta vritti nirodaha. Isn't that beautiful? I had to say it in Sanskrit because it's just so beautiful to hear. And it means yoga is the settling of the mind into stillness. Just like in the Bible, it says, be still and know that I am God. The third sutra says, when that happens, when there is stillness, and actually the first word is tada, like tada, tada drashtuhu svarupe avashtanam. When that happens, we see clearly the true brilliance, the splendor of our true nature. So just like a lake, you look out at a lake most of the time there's disturbance on the water. There's all these ripples and waves. That's exactly what's happening in our brains. Nonstop, all these things flashing around, all these disturbances that are our thoughts, our doubts, our fears, our worries, everything. It's constantly chatter. That's the job of the mind, right? Chatterbox. So that's always disturbing our vision. And when that happens, just like the lake, you can't see into the lake. You can only see the surface. So that's how we live our lives most of the time, through this veil. We're seeing the world through this veil. There's all that disturbance. And that's the human experience. It's very natural. So our goal is not to become something different, but simply to lift that veil, to somehow find a way to still ourselves enough that we can see deeply what the truth is, what our own truth is, which is everybody else's truth too, that is that beauty and radiance that children see every day. And that is, for me, what healing is really all about. So for me, when I went through a series of sounds like a bad country song, really, And I don't know why this happened to me, but in a 12-month period, I had a serious accident in my car. I lost control of my car on black ice. And I really honestly thought I would die and my child might die. I mean, it was a very serious accident. I was ended up on top of this driveway over a culvert. And the police got there and were like, how did you get up here? I should have smashed into the culvert. But the last thing I saw before we stopped was a tree in front of me. And in fact, it was a stand of sapling trees. And literally, I ran into the stand of sapling trees, which lifted me up over the culvert and stopped me from going out into the traffic. So it was literally the hand of God. The car was still running. It had some, you know, body damage. But we were not damaged other than what I had to pay out for the car repair. 10 days after that, I lost my job in a very brutal kind of fashion. You know, they come into your office and say your job doesn't exist anymore, so tomorrow you don't have a job. And it was a job where I was working very closely with students, and none of us saw it coming, and so there was no time for repair, you know, no time for goodbyes or thank yous or any kind of ending of relationships. So it was very, very difficult. But it certainly brought me compassion. It was at the height of all of the job loss in this country. I think it was February of 2009, and the highest number was January of 2009. So suddenly I'm in my room, my house, saying, oh, I get it. Now I get what all this, you know, uproar has been about. I didn't understand that before. And that's what happens, right, when we suffer something. Suddenly our hearts are broken open to compassion. We have a whole new compassion for everybody who's been in any kind of similar situation. So in that way, suffering is a beautiful thing because it brings us there. 10 days after that, they found a malignant melanoma on my back, which at the time was quite shocking. That's a serious cancer. It became very minimal later with other events in my life. So later they found a basal cell carcinoma on my face a few months after that. Then I had pulmonary embolisms. 3/4 of my lungs had blood clots in them, which people were looking at me in the hospital going, what's going on? I had no reason for those. And then they discovered that the cause of those was ovarian cancer. So that all happened in 12 months. It's a very, very strange thing. Knock on wood, nothing has happened since. Thank you very much. I'm feeling great. But through that experience, you know, for a while I felt like Job in the Bible. I just kept thinking of Job. I don't know what Job felt like, but I kept thinking of Job in the Bible. And I didn't feel like I was being punished, but I certainly felt like I was being tested. And I didn't know for what reason. But amazingly, somehow, not every day, because I too am very human, but most of the time I was like, okay, all right, what else you got? Bring it on, because here I am. It just felt like that was what my journey of the moment was. And then when I had those embolisms, I remember telling my mom, who is here today, that I felt now like I was being prepared for something. And again, I didn't know what. And now I think it was probably that journey with cancer, which was quite upsetting, I will say. But through that, oh my goodness, what abundance came out of that experience. I mean, literally, people were falling over themselves wanting to do something for me, which was not an easy place to be in. I'm used to taking care of myself. You know, we all have our pride, you know, and no thanks, it's all right. But I learned how to say, yes, please, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And one of the most amazing things that happened had to do with this church, actually. Well, there were a lot of amazing things that happened in this church. A lot of you supported me in many, many ways. And Kelly Hunt had a benefit concert for me, just like she did for Betty this past week, which was amazing and brilliant. But the thing that perhaps touched me the most, I was staying with our friend Betty Schaefer, who took me in after one of my hospital stays, and we were reading the paper, and it said that Earl had died. A lot of you remember Earl. So we're reading his memorial, and Earl was this man who, I believe he was a war veteran, is that correct? And he had diabetes, he had lost a leg, he's in a wheelchair. That man was always smiling. He was always radiant. And I did not know him that well, but I always tried to go and just tell him hello, and you know, for my own satisfaction, because it was such a pleasure to interact with him. He was a really lovely person, but I really didn't know him all that well. And I knew he had a lot of interests and a lot of, organizations that he was interested in supporting. So we're reading, Betty and I are reading this memorial going, oh my gosh, Earl died. And we read, and then at the bottom it said, in lieu of flowers, please donate to the Cindy Novello Health Fund, which I knew nothing about. I knew nothing about that. I'm like, what? Really? I mean, I was in need for sure, but I knew there's a lot of people in more need than me out there in the world. I was just so touched. Well, a few days before that, at the height of my, I really didn't have too many days of, you know, cursing God, but I did have a few. And this particular, one day in particular, I woke up just feeling very upset about everything. I'd been moved into a new house. I had a big slash in my belly. I could barely walk. And I, you know, didn't know what was going to happen to me. And I couldn't unpack. And woe is me. And, you know, just thinking, what did I deserve? Or what did I do to deserve all this misfortune? That was my state of mind. So 3 days later, I had forgotten that particular state of mind. And reading this announcement in the paper, I was so deeply touched. And I remember thinking, what did I do to deserve all this grace? What did I do to deserve all this grace? And then I remembered, oh, 3 days before, it was the opposite. So that's what our life is like, right? You know, in that other state, I was not seeing clearly. I was only seeing by my own confusion, my doubts, my fears, my worries, all these anxieties. And for that moment of grace, when I read that about Earl, then I was seeing clearly and recognizing the abundance of grace that was all around me. And from that experience, I learned that that's true in every single day. Every day, every day, there is abundant grace, even if we're in the midst of something really horrible. And I had the pleasure of hearing this person speak, Ishmael Bea. He was a boy soldier in Sierra Leone, a horrific, horrific life from a very young age. And he still works, he's written a book, and he still works with other nations trying to bring awareness to this situation. This man is a radiant person, this beautiful smile. And we had a question and answer period afterwards, and someone asked him, you have lived this horrific life. How can you be so radiant? How can you be smiling? And he said, I wake up every day so happy to be alive. So happy to be alive. Now that's someone who's seeing clearly. So next time you're worrying about something, whatever it is, if you're worrying, that means you're alive. You're breathing, and that is something to celebrate. And that is true, true healing. So all of these things, you know, I just really learned so much about perspective, about gratitude, about softening and opening. And I have this one other story. We'll be wrapping it up soon. But I had a friend who was in a relationship that clearly needed to either be dissolved or resolved. And I really like words, and so I started thinking about that, and I said, well, that's bizarre, that's opposite meaning, but the root is the same, solvere, solvere. So I looked it up. Solvere means to loosen. Dissolve means to loosen and separate. Resolve means to loosen again. And that has really stuck with me that, oh, the answer to whatever problem I'm facing is to loosen and to soften. So you think of the Venetian blinds. I don't know if you all have those. I have some that are three cords, and you know how they get all tangled up in a big knot? And what we try to do to resolve that is, I'm going to get you loose, you know? So, which doesn't work. It just makes it worse. But we tend to do that with our problems. There's a problem, we are like pushing it, shoving it, pulling it, thinking somehow that's going to solve the problem. But if you take your time and just start working that knot and start, you know, slowly, bit by bit. It's actually quite a meditative experience. I recommend it. If you're angry, go loosen a knot. And it just starts to come loose, and in a pretty short amount of time, even if it's really tight. So I love to think about that when I'm thinking about whatever issue I have at hand. And there's this wonderful, wonderful lyrics of Chris Delmhorst, a favorite songwriter of mine, that talks about that and also talks about this breaking open of the heart. Won't you break this heart for me? Don't you leave it here smooth and shiny, filling up my throat. Won't you just make a little crack for me so maybe something can get in? Or something could get out. If something could get in, maybe something could get out. So these times of brokenness, we tend to think they're bad. These times of darkness that we pass through. But life, that is part of life. Darkness is a part of life. Life comes from darkness. The seed in the ground, it's dark down there, and sometimes it has to push up through hard ground, cement, whatever, but it does it. That's the life force. A chicken in the egg, I guess I hear that it's quite hard to get out of there. They have to peck and peck and peck and peck. If you go break the egg open for them, they die. They're not strong enough. Just like the butterfly coming out of the cocoon, it's dark in there. If you go help it out, it will never fly. Its wings aren't strong enough. So we don't want to stay in there, and we're always trying to jump out before our time, but it's not going to work. We can't end the darkness until we are fully developed and ready to come out of it. And my goodness, if you think about the birth of a human baby, that is not pretty. It's painful, and it's messy, and things tear, and all this stuff is gushing around. It's very traumatic, but it's really beautiful what happens, and that squeezing helps the baby to breathe. So when we're in these moments of transition, we are being reborn. We are being reborn. And when the time is right, the pain will end, and it will be something amazing and beautiful. So just rest easy in those spots. Remember you're living and breathing, and look at your hand and feel healing. So thanks so much for being here, and thanks for allowing me to talk. And I wish you all the greatest healing. And if you'd like to get into this stuff more, I'll be back at 2:00. Thanks.